You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the Dressage Today podcast, sponsored by Equestrian Plus. This month, we are doing our follow-up interview with Beth Haste of The Horse, of course. I think Aviva and I can both agree we had such an amazing time talking to her, and I just had so many more questions that we are bringing her back for a second one. So I hope you enjoyed. Yeah, she just blew my mind. I've been thinking about it all month. So I hope you enjoy what she had to say.
I actually changed bits based on what she said, and my horse is going better.
Did you get the bit she said?
I think I have a bit that's very similar that I had used as the Berdoon for my double.
Okay.
And I was not using that as my Snaffle, in my simple Snaffle. So I started using it, and the first couple days, I will say Tiger was a little confused, and now he's going better than ever. So yay.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I have not moved bits, but I did buy the book. I found that book that she was talking about, and I bought that. So, and it's a little book. So, yeah, I'm going to read the book. Yes. Yes. So I hope that our audience enjoyed it as much as we did. And if you had any feedback, you know, we would love to have questions from you. In addition to that, always remember that we are always looking for judging questions that you could have for Aviva for our Ask the L segment. You can email it to either one of us at the address we have in our transcript. And as always, if you like what we're doing, make sure to share and subscribe and share with your friends. So,
absolutely.
So, Aviva,
having done
yes.
a little commercial, what's
having done our- I managed to make it through another horse show without completely melting. I wore a shirt that I did not have to. I could wear just the shirt and my pants, and I brought my jacket, and I thought, well, let me just see what everybody else is doing. Everybody had their jackets on, so I put my jacket on. I did. I had a
old, and I if jackets are excused, I don't wear them anymore.
If it had been the case, you know, if I'd seen anybody else going without one, I would have, but I didn't, and it was an Olympic judge, so I just thought, you know, I can deal with this. But I will tell you, I tried a new pair of pants, and I'm not going to name them because I know lots of people like them. They were not for me. They were a little thinner than I prefer. They were super stretchy, so that was all good. But when I was warming up and I was posting the abundance of silicone on these pants, all I could think of is I feel like a naked tree frog. So I had to get over that to go into my class. They were great for sitting, not so good for posting. So yeah.
I can't wear full seat breeches because I get stuck.
Yeah. Well, that's because you're little. You're little.
Not.
So what's going on with you?
Well, you know, I've been doing some virtual judging lately, and I was thinking a lot about how the world has changed over the decades that I've been riding. And I was thinking about the fact that many people now videotape their show rides and then not only post that video, but also post the written test sheet with all of the scores. And lots of people videotape their lessons and then post their lessons online. And thinking about how exposed we all are now and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. And I will say that I rarely post video of myself riding because when I watch myself ride, all I see is the negatives. And I'm embarrassed, and I don't want to
sure. Sure.
I will say that I ask my students not to post video of my lessons with the audio, because not that I don't believe that I know what I'm talking about, but because we say things to our students that are specific to the moment, and that those things can be taken out of context. I was teaching one of my students on somebody else's horse.
Mm-hmm.
So no one was watching. And it was kind of intimidating. And at the end of the lesson, I said to the owner, was there anything that I said that you didn't agree with or that, you know, was wrong? And she said, no, it was a very good lesson, except for one thing. You told the rider to pull her elbows back behind her. And I started to. And I said, you know, that's a really bad thing to do. But this rider rides with her elbows so far out in front of her that the only way I've been able to get her to bring her elbows even close to her body is to tell her to pull them back behind her. Lesson had gone online, and people thought, wow, if Eva tells people to ride with their elbows back there, that would make me look like an idiot.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about that. I was thinking about how, you know, we all wake up in the morning and we go to ride and we do the best we can. And sometimes we don't do very well. And it's a moment in time. And I don't believe, honestly, that anybody wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to get on my horse and I'm going to yank him in the mouth and I'm going to stab him with my spurs and I'm going to ride him poorly and make him miserable and unhappy. And I think that when you see that happening, that it is either a lack of knowledge, it's a bad moment, or it's something else. And we need to show people just a little bit more grace. The other thing I was thinking about is when you post something online, and this happens to me a lot when I'm teaching, somebody will come to watch me teach, and I'll be working with somebody I know frequently, and I do the lesson. At the end of the lesson, the observer will say to me, may I ask you a question? Of course. And the question is something like, you know, you talked a lot about her core and where her leg position needed to be, but you didn't talk about how busy her hands were. You know, and you can only address so many things. My trainer laughs at me. She says, you know, once I get past four or five things, you can't multitask. So I address the one, two, three, four things that are the most important. Understand that the learning process, the teaching process is building. It's lots of building blocks.
And sure.
You know, you can talk about hands till you're blue in the face, but if somebody doesn't have a seat, they don't have hands. So,
and they might not have a seat because of something. They might be stiff from having a desk job, or they might be stiff from being a lifelong runner and they're just a stiff, you know, athlete, or they might be afraid. Yes. There's so many reasons.
I met somebody once, and when I teach people to sit the trot, I say to them, don't hold yourself against it. Relax. Let the saddle move you. Move your hips side to side. You know, imagine that, you know what a bowling ball is like when it hits a trampoline. It goes ga-boom, ga-boom. You know what a bowling ball is like when it hits a mattress. It goes splat. Well, your horse is the bowling ball, and you need to decide whether you're going to be the trampoline or the mattress. You need to be the mattress. And people are told you need to be quiet. Stop moving. But if you watch the great riders, they're moving. They're just moving in conjunction with the horse. They are soft enough and strong enough that they allow the horse to move them. So,
yes.
Thinking about all of those things, and I was just thinking about how important it is to give people grace and to understand that we're all on a journey and that most of us are not particularly gifted or natural runners. And we're not trying to hurt our horses or to do bad things to our horses. And,
right,
you know, it let he who was without sin cast the first stone.
Yep. You know?
So I'm thinking about.
I think that was an incredibly well said, and I stand up and applaud you on that because, you know, I go around and teach in a lot of different places, and when I get new people, a lot of times the question will be, why hasn't anybody told me that before? It is not an opportunity for me to downplay somebody else's training. It's a chance to say, well, maybe they did and they just said it a different way, or maybe you weren't ready to hear it, or, yep, you know, because just like you said, I don't think anybody gets up thinking, I want to go out and teach some really terrible lessons today. So I just think, yeah, yeah, grace.
You know, you guys all know I adore my trainer and I think she's just amazing. And one of the things, mm-hmm, I'm gonna say is that, you know, I've been riding with her for over a decade and every lesson I learned something new. And it's not because she's withholding information, you know.
Right.
Every lesson I'm able to learn something new.
Yes.
So the week before I wasn't ready to hear or to do, you know, so just let's all be a little bit nicer. You know, as I said, I was just thinking about how things have changed. When I first started judging, I judged a show that was a memorial show, and it was a very special show. And the manager had arranged for a professional videographer to come and video all the tests. And the videographer asked me if he could stand behind me at C and not only video, but also catch the audio so that the riders not only had what the scribe wrote down, but what I said. And it was a very powerful reminder for me as a, you know, a newly graduated L.
Mm-hmm.
What I say is, and how differently I needed to say things in different settings.
Mm-hmm.
Again, let's all just be a little kind. And kudos to those of you who are brave enough to post things online of yourself riding.
Or if you're, yes, because yes,
that takes a lot of guts. You know,
it does. It does. I'm with you. I really question even just getting, you know, pictures from the show. I am much more likely to post a picture than I am video because, yeah, it's too easy for people to talk behind their hand and not in a constructive, hey, why were you doing this time way? So, yeah.
You know,
louder for the people in the back.
Yeah, I will tell you that I've seen photos of Ingrid Klimke, you know, and you know, Debbie McDonald and Robert Dover and, you know, some of the greatest riders. And the moment in time hasn't been pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I would give both of my arms to be able to ride like any one of them.
Right.
So, but enough with that. What's our question today?
Yeah, I was going to say, you jump down off your soapbox and I'm going to stop clapping. And then we're going to have you go put your judge's hat on. Tell me when you have your judge's hat on.
It's cute. It's on.
Okay, awesome. This month's L question comes from Nancy. Nancy wants to know, if you are riding a training or first level test, should you rise or sit the trot? And if you sit, does that give you, quote, extra credit?
Great question. I get asked this question a lot. It's another one of these, well, kind of questions.
Oh.
I will say that when I sit at C, I prefer to see my riders rising at training level and first level, because generally the riders don't have the strength and quality of seat to sit and be effective. And they actually do more damage than, you know, be successful by sitting. But that's not true in every single case.
Okay.
And some horses make it very difficult to rise. When I was competing, Harley, who was a Percheron Hackney Pony Cross, he was a very expressive mover, but he didn't have a lot of movement in his back. And I literally couldn't rise. There was threw me out of the saddle. So when I showed him first level, I sat. No one ever commented on it. I like to think it's because my seat was good enough and I was effective enough sitting. Interestingly, I just judged a virtual test today. And it was a rider riding first level test 3, very capable rider. And she sat the entire test and there was no problem. However, I recommended that she consider rising for her lengthenings because her lengthenings lacked, and this was first level test 3. So test at second level where we're looking at mediums, not lengthenings. You know, her lengthening lacked cadence, suspension, ground cover.
And
expressive.
And your first thought, because she was sitting, was it her holding the horse back?
And not only that, but when you rise, you can use your rise to encourage the horse's hind legs. You know, when you're working to slow a horse down, or you're working to make a horse a little bit longer in the stride or more expressive, you rise of your post as opposed to the sit of your post. You can post with more, I call it more drama in your hips when you're going for a lengthening. Because again, as you really push forward with your hips, you're saying to the horse, bring your hind legs more under you. So you're encouraging the lengthening by using your biomechanics. So if you sit well, if you have a beautiful seat, go ahead and sit. And I've had students who have said to me, should I rise or should I sit? And I might not think that they have the world's greatest seats. However, they are more effective when they are sitting than they are when they are rising, for whatever reason. Said, go ahead and sit. And you may get a comment from the judge. And if you do, smile and say thank you. Don't argue.
Right. The other thing, you're not there to explain yourself. You know why you were doing it.
And if the judge wants to say that it's your fault as the rider for, you know, dumbing down your horse, that's probably better than thinking that the horse is less than. The other thing that most people don't seem to know is that you can, at intro, you must rise. That's non-negotiable.
Right.
Training and first level, you can choose to rise or you can choose to sit, but you can change your mind. So you can start across a diagonal in training level that's just a working trot, or in first level that's a lengthening, and you can start out sitting and go to rising. You can start a circle, rise and go to sitting because you're losing something and you need to get your inside seat bone into the horse.
So you wouldn't be bothered if they changed something in the middle of a, okay.
Not at all.
Okay.
What I like to see is a lot of first level riders start their lengthening sitting and then they go to rising. And what I like is that they're stabilizing their horse as they start the diagonal and then they're starting to grow it, as opposed to, you know, whipping through the turn and shooting them across the diagonal. I want to see riders who are riding what they're sitting on. And
right. Not the book they read.
You know, there are I had a student just the other day who said, you know, I had judged her. She was writing a beginner novice test, and it's a big school horse, and he got really strong in the canter, and she literally stood in the stirrups and pulled back to get him to stop.
Okay.
She said, you know, and I commented on it in the test, and she didn't get a great score for that.
And sure.
Next lesson, we talked about it, and, you know, she said, what am I supposed to do? And I said, half halt, every single stride from the minute you start the canter, start half halt. Because you can't wait until it's time to do the transition. And if you half halt 150 times before you get to the transition and your horse is balanced, you'll have the balance in the transition.
Right. So, right. Better planning.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully that answers Nancy's question, which is, you know, whatever's right.
Yeah. And I'm sure you can discuss it beforehand with your trainer, but even at that, your trainer cannot possibly think of every preventative moment. So yeah, if you feel like you've got to get stuff back together, sit.
Well, you know, there's so much change. When I started riding dressage, all of first level was done sitting except for the lengthenings. And then they changed.
Oh, because, okay.
You know, people couldn't. And, you know, at that time, they weren't expected to be on the bed and through at first. You know, it's really hard to sit a horse that doesn't give you his back.
Yes.
And as much as we like to think that people who are competing, you know, with their horses back up and round and through, that's not always true. And now they're actually talking about at third and fourth levels, allowing riders to rise for the medium and the extension. So, you know, there's a lot of controversy about it, just like there's a lot of controversy about things like nose bands and spurs and double bridle versus, you know, snaffle bridle. Skill level of people, and some of it is about the ability of horses. You know, my horse is old, which we know, and sitting his collected work is really, really easy. But sitting his mediums and his extensions are difficult because they're difficult.
So, right.
If I were competing him, I would sit because I have to. But if I had the option of rising, I would rise.
I can't remember who it was. I want to say it might be Wendy, but it might have been another horse she was riding at the time. But I remember in the past couple of years that Isabel Wirth kind of made a splash in international dressage because she started across an extended trot and she posted a couple strides. And people were like losing their minds because Isabel Wirth posted, and apparently she did not get knocked off. I mean, I obviously didn't see her test score, but or her test sheet, but I don't think she got knocked off for it. And that's kind of what you're saying, is she felt that she needed to do that to help her horse be at its best at that moment. So she did what was best for the horse. Yeah.
Needed those couple of moments to help the horse rebalance.
Yeah.
Without weight.
So, but I thought that was pretty cool.
That's very cool. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier and giving people grace. You know, if Isabel Wirth can do it, you know, I think about all of the things that have happened to me over the years in my riding experience. And I can pretty much tell you that every single Olympian has had one of those things happen, if not all of them. You know, they haven't done a movement well.
Yep.
This is, you know.
They're horses.
They're horses and we're humans and we all make mistakes.
Yes.
But, yeah. Yeah. So those training level and first level riders out there, if you want to sit, go ahead and sit. But if you want to rise, go ahead and rise. And if you want to do both, do both. but do what's best for the horse and do what's best for you.
Excellent. Thank you, Aviva. Thank you. Well, so we're going to move on to, unfortunately, it's just going to be me interviewing Beth this time. Well, you know, we can't always make our busy days work together, but we will miss you. But before we go on to that, we're going to have a word from our sponsor. From short training tips to how-to videos and insider access to private clinics and lessons, learn from top dressage experts with Equestrian Plus. Watch exclusive interviews and lectures, slow motion demonstrations, and step-by-step tutorials taught by top-level pros, and explore cross-discipline topics such as groundwork, rider fitness, and stable management. Visit equestrianplus.com to sign up for a 7-day free trial with subscription. Welcome back. I am here again with Beth Haste of The Horse, of course. Beth, thank you for coming back and sitting with us again, or sitting with me, since we do not have Aviva this time.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I love to talk about bets.
Well, and it was, we got some great feedback from people. You know, they said it was so interesting to listen. We got some questions, and I personally had a lot of questions. Not because you left anything unanswered, but just the more we talked, the more I was like, well, what about this? What about that? So here we are again.
Yeah, let's roll back and finish up some of those questions. It'll be great.
Absolutely. So one of the things that you talked about in the very beginning was the fixed ring bits and the loose ring bits, and that the baby bit, that's not exactly the word you used, but that the starting bit should be a fixed ring bit. And you gave a really good explanation of that. Is there a time at which you feel like you should move to a loose ring bit?
I really feel that if the horse has accepted the bit and is going well in the bit, mm-hmm. that you shouldn't be looking to change anything if you don't have to. We do change if we're want to move up the levels in the FEI, where we're wanting that little bit of extra collection, which is why mm-hmm. we introduce the curb.
Okay.
But it's not because the horse hasn't accepted the contact. And if the horse has accepted a contact, then you could actually move on to a double. But if they haven't, putting them in the double is not going to help them accept the contact.
Okay. Okay. So it's a rider skill set, but it's also a level of acceptance and confidence in the horse.
Yes, it's also got to do with noise. And when you have a loose ring, mm-hmm. every movement of your hand vibrates down to the horse's mouth. Mm-hmm. Where if you have a fixed cheek, that doesn't happen. So what you have is a very quiet bit versus a very noisy bit. And if okay. your horse can handle the noise, yes, you could probably add a little bit to the communication, but your hands have to be exceptionally good or okay. else you just put a lot of noise down there, which okay. is why horses usually like the fixed cheek better than the loose ring, because then you can be very deliberate. It's like having a whippy whip and a stiff whip.
Mm-hmm.
A stiff whip you use, and you can control the information, where the whippy whip, if you don't have great hands, can get the horse inadvertently.
That's a great comparison. That's yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. Okay.
So you need to change. I think if a horse is really accepting, I mean, really the bit is a very simple thing. It doesn't mm-hmm. do an awful lot. It just helps you control the flow of energy. So if the horse is accepting of the bit and is relaxed in the mouth and is salivating and keeping their mouth closed, what do we want to mess that up?
Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
You got it.
Okay.
That's my theory. And the softer you can go, I think also, the better off you are, because you always then invite the horse to the party rather than saying to the horse, you must come to the party.
Okay.
And so that invite to the party is due to the softness.
And when you are thinking about softness of the bit, you are thinking about the weight of it, the size of it, the like the diameter of it, things of that nature. The one joint versus two.
Of course.
Okay.
Now the weight of the bit has got to do with your horse stretching into that contact.
And you said that so beautifully the last time we talked that it was. You wanted them to, they were either in the on position or the off position.
Yes.
And I just thought, what, that was so clear.
Mm-hmm. When you look at the bit, you want to pick up both the reins to see about the fit, because then the bit moves up into a narrower portion of the mouth. Having it just hang there, that's a little bit wider portion of the horse's mouth. So you can't really get a great idea of how the bit fits until you put it on contact.
Okay. So now, can you do that from the ground?
Pardon?
Are you okay to do that from the ground, or do you need to do that?
Pick up both the reins on either side of the bit and just move it up.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
And then you can see, and in a loose ring, you want both sides to be just inside the hole that the ring slides through. And you have to put both sides on contact.
Okay. At the same time, you've got to have contact both sides.
Right. And if it's too big, then it's sliding back and forth across the bars.
Mm-hmm.
In a fixed cheek bit, we don't want it sliding through at all. In other words, we want it to be very stable in the horse's mouth. So there shouldn't be any extra room at all.
Okay.
And the stability is what the horse relies on.
Right. So you can stabilize with the bit, but you can also stabilize with your hands or destabilize with either.
Right.
Okay. Sticking with the weight of it.
Okay.
There are some, you know, I remember, you know, before we had the black rubber bits. I don't know even know if those are still out there or not. But then there's some plastic bits and some plastic rubber combinations. Those are lighter bits. And there are metal bits being made very, very lightweight. Is there a purpose in this? I don't want to say value. Is there a purpose behind those bits?
Yes. Well, I don't understand what the purpose can possibly be if the bit doesn't have enough weight to move from the on position to the off position.
Okay.
That is an aid. And when we eliminate that weight, we're eliminating that aid. And when you start to release your rein and the horse is reaching for your contact, which is what he's supposed to do, you lose that. If you don't have the bit where it makes any difference to the horse as an aid. So that's why weight is an important aid in the bit. If you want it to stretch over the back and reach for the bit, which is what we're looking for, then that is your helpful aid is the weight.
So why are there bits out there that don't have any weight to them?
I think that we have, we're making bits sometimes that maybe, I don't know that they understand what helps and what doesn't help. I don't understand it. I think we've lost a lot of information on bits over the years, i.e. why we lost the French link. There was nothing wrong with it. It was just that we had people making bits that didn't have any idea what it was. So I think we've lost some of the information out there.
Okay. Oh, I did buy I found that book. I haven't read it yet, but I did buy that book that you recommended. So I'm looking forward to
that's
the,
really
yes.
Cool book. Yes.
Yes. I'm excited about that. So.
Good.
Okay. So not a lot of use for a bit that doesn't have any weight to it. Let's talk about metals again. Now, you said some really interesting things, especially about stainless steel, which is, you know, stainless steel is the most available economical bit out there. If you wanted to try different bits, you'd probably buy a stainless steel version first. But what you put in front of us is that wouldn't necessarily be giving you your best feedback from the horse.
Well, there's a lot of stainless steel bits out there made by people who have no idea what makes the correct bit. So they can take a lot of freedom in changing things up with not knowing why they're doing it. So, and stainless steel always remains cold in the horse's mouth. It never warms at all.
Right.
So when we're looking for a bit, what are we looking for? We're looking for acceptance of the bit. So to help with that acceptance of the bit, if it's got a 70% copper basis to it, it will warm to the temperature of a horse's mouth. So if it warms to the temperature of a horse's mouth, it then becomes more neutral and more acceptable. I find that, and I have used a plastic bit when I had, and it was my own fault, and it was in the days when I knew nothing. I had sent a young horse off to get started by my trainer and neglected to have her teeth floated at the last minute before I sent her over. And her mouth got a little bit sore. And, of course, then she blamed it on the bit because she's a mare and she's clever. And, of course, that had to be the whole thing. So I changed the bit out and put a Nath bit, which is a dog bone-shaped bit, and it's plastic. And it's very soft. You almost feel like you could, like, tie it up in a knot. And I put that. It's a real baby bit. But you have zero control. Not that you have a lot of control with bits anyway, but I put her in that for a year because she's a mare and she's a horse and she doesn't forget. And after a year, then I was able to put her back into a metal bit. So I did it as an interim bit to make her not feel like this bit is out to get her.
Okay. That's and a great, I, yeah.
And had I known at the time, I would have put her in an egg butt, but I didn't know that then. Now I know.
Right. Now you know. When we know better, we do better.
Oh, my God. It could have made my life so much simpler on a couple of horses with that.
That's why they say youth is wasted on the young, because we're like, you could know so much more. And they just haven't run into those problems yet.
And not only that, but the you know, there's not a lot of information sometimes out on certain things. Bits are one of them. There's not a lot of information out there. And if we can glean some really good information, we can maybe make our life easier.
Right.
And a better communication with the horse.
People have a tendency to choose historically. You know, my trainer uses this bit, therefore I use this bit. And there isn't necessarily a reason why. It's just what's always been done.
Well, it's like playing telephone, you know? Mm-hmm. It's been passed down. And, I mean, for years, everybody put a 5 1/4 inch curb in a horse's mouth because it was all handed down from one trainer to another. And I mean, I never sell a 5 1/4 inch bit ever, ever, ever in a curb. It's just too big, but we didn't know. And we didn't know that these big fat bits were an issue. Mm-hmm. You know, we just took what was handed down to us, or maybe what came with the horse.
Sure. Yeah, 100%.
You know, and, of course, that had to be the best.
Yes. Yes, because it had been, this is what this horse went in. Therefore, this is what this horse should go in forever.
Right. But so, maybe you don't ride like that person who was showing you the horse in the video.
Yeah. There's that too, wasn't anything. There? So,
you know, and another, and I'm just saying that, you know, it's, you pick a bit for the horse, you pick a mouthpiece for that particular horse, and you try to put the right size in. So now you're at least starting at a good spot with the horse to begin with.
Right.
And you can always, you can sometimes do better. And that's what we're talking about.
Okay. And as so you had said on the last time we were together that pretty much 4 3/4 is a darn good place for just about every horse out there now.
In a fixed cheek or a curb.
Okay. And that is simply so much smaller.
Yes, because we didn't realize it. We just didn't know. And the average size in a loose ring is between a 5 1/4 and a 5 1/2. That hasn't changed.
Okay, because we need to make sure they have more space to stay away from the hole.
The ring, yes, because it will pinch. And we want to make sure that they're comfortable because we know how they can blame things and not forget things. But what happens with a fixed cheek is that you're moving anything that can pinch further away from the corner.
Okay.
And in some horses that have really big fleshy lips, it's a lot easier to put them in a fixed cheek than it is to put them in a loose ring and deal with all that extra flesh.
Okay. On that note, as horses age, do their mouths get wider?
I haven't felt that because what I'm feeling is underneath their jaw, those two bones underneath their jaw, is the width between the bars.
Okay.
And basically, we're looking at, and most horses maybe have 2 1/2, 3 inches width on the bars. And so that's why we're trying to put in something that might fit. I mean,
okay.
If all things equal, I mean, we'd be putting in like a 3 1/2 or a 3 1/4 inch bit, but we have to deal with the lips. So, going to at least a 4 3/4 doesn't get the bit moving side to side, and so the bit is then more stable, and then you have to do, and then you can do less with your hands. That's what we're looking for.
Because you're not taking up the sloppiness of the...
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So when you can just pick up your fingers and now you can make an imprint rather than doing more because a bit sliding and all over the place, it makes it more precise.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. So it's not necessarily, so when one is fitting a bit, finding the right width for their horse isn't necessarily based just on what they see on the outside. They need to be feeling like underneath where the bars are.
They need to be putting the bit on the bridle and picking up both reins.
Okay.
And then looking at how the bit fits.
Okay.
Now, in a curb, you can you need to have it where it's also stable and it's not pulling back and forth through their mouth. Now, some horses have what you call a short, stocky head. And you can then open up those two places above the shank that attach to the bridle.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a horse with a short, stocky head, because sometimes by the time you put the leather on there, it might feel like it might be a little tight above, because you want to put a finger in between the horse's head and the top of those rings.
Okay.
And you can always bend them out a little bit to give a little bit more room without compromising the size of the bit in the mouth.
Okay. I have done that before. So yes, that's something I knew you could do.
I do it a lot, actually.
So let's talk a little bit more about doubles.
Okay.
And like when, so the first time someone can show in a double bridle is third level.
Right.
Nationally, you are no longer required all the way through Grand Prix you do not have to show in a double. You can show in a snaffle all the way through Grand Prix at a national level. But at the FEI level, it is still required to be in a double bridle. So for our listeners who might be approaching a second level or a third level, you know, training with their horse, what would be their cue? Hey, maybe it's time to move my horse into the double.
Well, again, when we talk about a curb in mm-hmm. dressage, we only introduce the curb because we're looking for that little extra bit of collection. It's almost like a finishing bit. So if your horse is going well in its snaffle bit,
mm-hmm.
and you're not looking for that little extra bit of collection, you probably will want to stay with your snaffle. If your horse has not accepted your snaffle bit and is not going forward to the contact in your snaffle bit, I would not introduce the curb. It's
okay.
Only after your horse is on the aids, over the back, going forward and accepting the snaffle, could you or should you introduce the double, the curb bit. Because I think that's super important. It's like the basics, you know? If you cut out a step of the basics, then mm-hmm. you're going to have to pay for that later on, possibly. Acceptance is the most important thing before you go on to adding an extra bit.
Once someone's in a double, once they have introduced the double and gone through the period of the getting to know you period with that bit,
right.
Is there ever a time that they would revisit the snaffle?
Well, I think that's a training issue, but I personally would like to see the horse probably go 3 or 4 days in the snaffle and only go in the double maybe 3 days a week. I mean, you want to make sure that all your connections are still good and correct. So that's what I was always brought up to think.
Okay. I read, I was rereading Reiner Klimke's Alrich recently, and it was so interesting. Even at competitions, he would warm up in his snaffle, and then once the horse was warmed up to his liking, he would take him back and put the double on. So he did not rely on the double as his main form of communication, even though he was required.
Dressage, you don't do that.
Yeah.
So I think, and you know, he was a classical guy who rode beautifully, and the horses were well trained.
Pretty amazing watching him.
Yes. But the acceptance of the snaffle is, I think, the most important portion of all this. That's why we spend a lot of time discussing snaffles,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then even then, when you choose a double, you have to reward the horse for being good in the snaffle. So
explain
you want
that.
To put that – well, to me, if they're good in the snaffle – and they're giving this to you, and they've joined your party, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Then if you're going to put in a double, you want to put in the softest double that you possibly can, not to upend what you've just been working on. So in that respect, you just want to keep them inviting them to the party and not saying, oh, well, I'm doing this because you haven't done something or I'm not happy with you. So to me, that's where you can get into a problem. And I think there's like two bits out there that are really soft and lovely. And one of them is a French bit called the Moore's Lot. And it has no break in the mouthpiece at all. And it has a very, very, very slight arch over the tongue. And it utilizes the tongue and the bars at the same time. So it spreads any pressure over a bigger surface. And it was probably one of the most, it's probably the most original bit that would take you back to predate Jesus Christ. And it's still today, and it's very French, so it's very inviting the horse to the party and self-carriage and, you know. So you can have a bit with an arch, but when I say a quick arch, when it's more arched, it's going to come down to the bars first. So it has to be almost flat to make it spread that that pressure over a bigger bearing surface. And then if you have any break in the mouthpiece, then you have pinpoint tongue pressure, and then you go up into the palate, and then the palate is the strongest form of control on the horse's head. So you have to be really careful and looking at that bit and figuring out how the bit actually works when it's engaged in the horse's mouth.
So again, and picking up the reins to see the action of the bit as you're trying it.
Move it up and move it like you would move it in the horse's mouth, and you can see what it's going to do.
Okay.
So whether it's going to come down on the tongue or it's up into the palate. But to me, if the horse is doing really great, then you want something very simple and inviting, and that to me is more like a Moore's Lot. And I think it's spelled M-O-R-S, and then it's an L-H-O-T-T-E, so it's French.
Yes, I looked that up last time, yes.
Right, there are takeoffs on that bit, and there is a bit out there that does the same thing as the Moore's Lot. Only somebody was very, very clever, and I'd like to meet that person, who took that slight arch over and moved it back 45 degrees into the horse's mouth. And you'd say, well, that doesn't do very much. But when you engage that bit, it literally gives a release of the tongue. And it's an amazing bit. It's like one of my all-time. It's my go-to. I really like that bit a lot. But it's a takeoff of the Moore's Lot. And the Moore's Lot is a classic, classic curb bit.
Okay. So,
and that goes hand in hand with inviting the horse to come to the party.
Sure. Sure. I guess thinking about, when I think about the simplicity of a bit, looking at the Moore's Lot versus a Mullen mouth, right. I probably would have thought that the Moore's Lot was a more involved bit, just because the Mullen mouth tends to look more straightforward. Oh, it's just one expansive metal.
But the Moore's Lot arches over the tongue, and the Mullen arches forward. So when you engage a Mullen, the Mullen actually comes down onto the horse's tongue, forcing the horse to pull his tongue back.
Okay.
Where no matter what you do with the Moore's Lot doesn't change what the horse is doing with its tongue.
Got it. Okay. That's a great explanation of the difference between the two.
That's why I'm saying you have to look at it, how it sits in the horse's mouth and what it does. Mm-hmm. There was a bid out there, and there's a couple of companies that make this particular curb bid, and it came out years ago and said, oh, this is the best curb bit ever, and it had like a square port to it, and it allowed the three-piece bit to fit in there, and it gave room for the tongue. But yet when you engage the bit, you can see that the bit actually comes down onto the tongue. So that's why you have to pick these things up and look and see actually the engineering. It's all about the engineering and how it functions in the horse's mouth, not just what somebody has decided to tell you. You have to think and look at it and figure it out.
Make your own decision for you and your horse.
Well, if you have some knowledge, and this is what we're working on here at this podcast and the last podcast, is so you can actually think about and look at a bit and help you to make some decisions on whether that would be suitable for you or your horse.
Right. Another choice that people have when choosing their curb, there's different lengths of the shank.
Yes.
That's the outside of the bit from the bit down.
Which is where you attach your curb rein to.
Right. Talk to me about what those differences accomplish.
We've always had a thought process that if the shank was shorter, which would be typically 5 centimeters, that it was going to be less powerful in the horse's mouth.
Okay.
And due to physics, we realize that that's really not quite true. And a standard length in your curb shank is 7 centimeters. And 2 centimeters is never going to make power in the horse's mouth. So we now look at the shank length as possibly more aesthetic than functional. So if a horse has a short smile, it might look better in a shorter shank. I personally think a 7-centimeter shank looks very normal and it looks right in a horse's mouth. And since it doesn't add power, I prefer a 7-centimeter shank to the short shank. Maybe if the horse
visually?
Yes. To me, I like the visual look of it, but I think now we can just look at that shank length and just decide whether we want it just for aesthetic purposes, not functional.
Okay. So it's just, it doesn't make that big of a difference.
It makes no real difference at all. Unless they change what's above the bit, then you're changing the ratio. But if you don't change the length above the bit, then it could go down longer and it's not going to be more powerful.
And the length above the bit does not change from bit to bit. Is that correct? Or is that another place that it can't change?
Some might have a little bit different ratio than others. But in general, if you're just buying a bit, whether it's a 5-centimeter or a 7-centimeter of the same bit, it's not going to change. Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's so much.
I know.
And you've covered so much again, which just makes me happy.
Can I make one thing here?
Absolutely. And
when you decide that you would like to try to go to invite a curb into your training, you should really not change the snaffle bit. You should, if the horse has accepted the snaffle bit and is going well and is carrying himself, taking contact, lengthening and shortening due to the length of your reins and letting the bit go down and up and salivating and relaxed, you want to use the same bit for your double. Now, you could So you want the same style. So if, let's say, you had an egg butt snaffle, three-piece, and the horse is going really well with that, then we would mm-hmm. want a three-piece egg butt Bradoon.
So the size of the ring can change because you've got to have the smaller ring in order to not run into the curb, but the inside is what you're more talking about.
Correct.
Okay.
And you want to, if you're, let's say that you're riding in a 16 millimeter egg butt, that's what the bit is around in your snaffle. Mm-hmm. You definitely want to go a little bit narrower because you don't want to put such big fat bits in the horse's mouth. Most Bradoons run between 12 and 14 millimeters around. And your curb really shouldn't be more than about 14 millimeters. I think 16 and 18 is just way too big for the horse's mouth.
Okay.
And you, I mean, they only have X amount of room in there. And now the modern sport horse has a flat palate, a fat tongue, narrow bars, mm-hmm. and doesn't have a lot of room in there. So we don't want to overwhelm the horse by putting too big a bits in the horse's mouth. So if we keep the curb no bigger than 14 millimeters and the Bradoon no bigger than 14, then we're usually better off. A lot of the old bits that you can find in the consignment stores and whatever are mm-hmm. 18 millimeters, even 20 millimeters was not uncommon years ago.
Yes, but I have a big, fat, loose ring, German silver, that's just, it's just massive. And it's right. so much weight in your hand. I haven't used it in years, but I keep it around just kind of like a relic.
Right. And there is that new curb, new snaffle bit that I explained the last time, that they've mm-hmm. taken a fat bit and squished it.
Yes, I think that's brilliant.
Bearing surface. They also mm-hmm. make that in a Bradoon. So you can take your bit, move into a Bradoon with the same style and size as that you were riding in the snaffle. And that's what you want to do. Because the first bit that goes in the horse's mouth should be familiar.
Okay.
And I would ride them in the Bradoon for a little bit before I even added the curb.
Okay, to make sure, because if there is a change, even if it's the most minute change from ring size or from a 16 to a 12, you want to make sure that everything's good there first.
Exactly. Acceptance, acceptance, acceptance.
Okay.
One more thing just to be helpful.
Sure.
And the size of the curb versus the size of the Bradoon.
Yeah.
When you have a fixed cheek Bradoon, it's going to be the same size as your curb. If you're putting a curb with a loose ring, you need to go up a minimum of a quarter to a half inch bigger. And in some cases could even be 3/4 inch bigger, whatever fits in the horse's mouth.
Okay. So that the curb does not pinch the loose ring.
The curb isn't really going to pinch. It has no moving parts. So you want that to fit like you do an egg butt. You know, mm-hmm. nice fitted, mm-hmm. not a lot, no sloppiness, no moving side to side. But yet, you can't put that with a loose ring without making the loose ring actually fit in the horse's mouth properly.
Okay.
And it's got to be bigger than the curb. But yet, when you use a fixed cheek and a curb together, they should be the same size. So
they can be the same.
Let's say you have a 4 3/4 egg butt. You'd want a 4 3/4 curb.
I can tell you every bit in my barn is too big.
I find that a lot, unfortunately. Yeah. Mm. So I hope this gives people things to think about.
Yeah. Yes, I listened to our podcast 3 times, and every time I was like, oh, I've got to ask her about that. So yes, thank you. Thank you for sharing your knowledge with us. We appreciate it. And we will again make sure that we share your information So that if people want to reach out to you directly, they can. Or if they want to send questions through us.
Yes, you can do that too. But if they're going to send it to me, I had some that were forwarded from Contact Us at the Horse of Course, and I was having a hard time sending it back to them. So they can just reach out to me, beth@thehorseofcourse.com. It makes it easy.
Perfect.
And then I'll respond back.
Okay.
And if anybody hasn't heard from me that sent me something, send it to that email again, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
That could be why they didn't. They didn't hear back from you, because you've just been great contacting you back and forth. So awesome. Thank you for your knowledge.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.